A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
This is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Tammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Good weekend to all our Arrow Squad members. This is the Flash.
And this is Cammy. Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, or I guess, like, good night if you're listening to this before bed.
Yeah, who knows? All I know is
I got everything covered, right?
I think so. It's super early in the morning for me. This is a very early Saturday morning wake-up call. But
yes,
it's okay. I actually took a walk outside in the cool morning air to kind of wake me up and stuff, and I'm ready to go.
Aww, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. Well, we are here to cover Season 6, Episode 21, Docket Number 1119-4173. And this is Arrow Squad, episode 141, Cammy. We are getting close to the 150.
We are getting close to the 150. We'll hit that next season.
Next season.
Do you want to hear what I found out about the title, by the way, of this episode?
Yeah, would you hear?
Okay, so you remember last week we were talking about how that seems kind of odd, you know, the sequence of numbers, and why was that the title of this week's episodes? It's because, okay, so 1119-4173, it's because in November 19 of 1941, in the 73rd issue of something, that was the first appearance of Green Arrow.
Oh, wow. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's his trial number for this. But so it's referencing a specific issue in the comics.
That I guess we'll have to call on Bat Jordan to tell us exactly what comic that was.
Yes, Bat Jordan, tell us all of the history of Green Arrow that we need to know.
Awesome. Well, let's get into this episode then.
Yeah.
You want me to go first with the ratings?
Yes, take it away.
This is strange. A villain never goes first. All right.
Well, I've got to like set you up and then like tear it down. Not really, actually, because our rating episodes are pretty similar for this one.
So true. Well, I give this 8 Emmy Awards for Stephen Amell. Yep, this was some of his best work so far. His performance all episode, whether it was comforting William and Felicity or confronting the corruption or his surprise at seeing Tommy show up, he nailed every scene. Kudos to Stephen Amell. Way to go, my friend. I wish he was my friend. Anyway, I usually can't stand courtroom scenes in any TV show. Just law and all that snorefest stuff actually kind of bores me. So I was really worried going into this episode, just going, oh man, it's going to be a bunch of courtroom drama. But I actually found it gripping and twisting like a good movie. That entrance by Tommy was a shocker. And it just lends complete credence to why I absolutely hate spoilers. If I had have known anything about any of it, that whole sequence would have been ruined. So seeing him crash through the roof and pull off the mask and it's Tommy just blew me away. It was a breathtaking, oh my God moment, and I absolutely loved it. The surprise was purely genuine. And then to find out that it was Human Target just floored me as I was racking my mind how Tommy could have been alive all this time and in some prison camp across the world where Diggle goes to rescue him. I was floored. My mind was going crazy trying to figure all that out. And then later in the episode, the double trick of Human Target being the judge in the end was a double take holy crap moment. I loved it because I did not see that coming at all. I didn't suspect anything. I was at first just surprised that the judge swung in Oliver's direction because I thought, what? He actually isn't corrupt. Oh my God, this is awesome. And sure enough, it's, you know, Chase again. Loved it. Just amazing, amazing shock moments in this episode. Mm-hmm. The only thing that brings down the episode a little bit for me was that the sequence, which I find kind of funny. The one that bothered me was the whole opening sequence with Diggle going all one-man army to break Human Target out. I actually thought it was kind of hokey and not really believable. It just had this scent of cheese to it. It's just like it did not come out. It didn't feel like it was Spartan out there doing it. It felt like they had their hands in it way too much to make him look like this super soldier, and he can just drop in out of the sky and take all these guys out. The opening scene.
I loved that.
I don't know. I rewatched it a couple times. To me, it just struck me as too over the top cheesy. It wasn't believable.
Oh, I mean, like, it was super cheesy, but it felt like the same kind of cheesy that all the fight scenes are. Like, it felt very similar to the kind of cheesy we get with, you know, Green Arrow's fight scene. I don't know.
No, not to me.
I'll watch it again.
It just felt too, it felt hokey. Hokey is the best word to me. Just, you guys didn't make this believable. It was too set up.
Because he's got all the Argus people with him now. I would kind of expect it to come across as pretty high powered rather than like an Arrow mission, you know?
Yeah, not sure. But anyway, that's the one part I didn't like. And gives me an 8. But
yeah.
Awesome episode for Steven. Again, he's really shining this season and stretching his acting chops.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How about you?
Well, my rating's actually pretty similar to yours. It's a 7.7 out of 10, just a little bit lower. So I kind of found it difficult to assign a rating for this episode because I felt like some moments were like a 9.5 and then some moments were like a 4, and there wasn't really too much in between because we were given, you know, again, a lot of highs and lows, but not in terms of it being, you know, an emotional roller coaster. It was more in terms of the quality of the content. The bright side, you know, they averaged out to a fairly solid rating. 7.7 is higher than I've given episodes in a couple weeks, I think. So I mostly really enjoyed it. I would have expected them to save the trial of Oliver Queen as a season finale type of moment, and they were willing to bring it in earlier. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's
true. Willing to not save their punches for the end. It gives us hope that the finale will be even better. So that's another sort of bright side. The gaping flaws, I'm so disappointed in the cheap, shoddily written, shoddily delivered face-off between Siren and Dragon. That's the thing everybody's sort of dragging, and I'm right there with them. I can't understand how that even made it to script, quite frankly. But there were so many shining moments. The Queen family tugs on our heartstrings, reminds us why we care. The team came together to fight what did indeed seem to be such widespread corruption in terms of the way the courtroom was set up. You kind of expected the jury to be bought out, the judge to be bought out. So it kind of felt pretty hopeless when everybody was testifying. And that, you know, kudos to the villain. That was a believable villain heavy moment. And also Dragon appeared in the courtroom as well when he didn't even need to be there to add that sense of hopelessness. So the actual plot, Oliver versus Star City, Oliver versus Dragon, was pretty solid. It was the Dragon versus Siren stuff that I was so crushed that they would let it come to that kind of head. That was awful. Oh my God. Anyways, but it's okay. It averaged out all right. We'll just ignore that ever happened and move on. So decent episode.
Move on until it comes up again later in our notes, because I'm kind of curious a little more about why you hated that so much, but we'll get to it. Awesome. Cool. Well, pre-show feedback. Once again, we've got Aaron with us. So what does Aaron have to say this time? What are some of the highlights?
Well, Erin writes in to talk about last week's episode. She starts by saying salty over Renee Cammy is her favorite Cammy. More of that to come. But, you know, Renee kind of bought himself some slack this episode. She says she wanted to enjoy the Anatoly stuff, but he felt out of character for timing. She doesn't want anti-hero Laurel, referencing some of the theories we were tossing around last week, as well as Bette Jordan's theory. Right. She says she doesn't think there's enough quality bad guys across Flash, Arrow, Legends, Supergirl, etc.
That's actually a good point, because even Flash, like I hands down, I think Reverse Flash is the best villain they've ever had. And, and for us, it's been Slade Wilson and Prometheus. So, I can kind of see where she's coming up from there. But There's hope. Yeah. There's hope. I'm enjoying Dragon, but we'll see what she thinks by the end of the season.
Yeah. She says, speaking of people she wants to keep, she definitely wants us to be able to keep Zoe on Arrow. And she agrees about Dragon not being a Prometheus. She also agrees with you that the Quentin Laurel story has hurt both characters.
Yes.
She goes on to sort of pick apart some of the plot holes with the Lance and Siren story, even if you ascribe to Lance that what Dragon has on Siren is that even if she could kill him in his sleep, you know, he could still track her or something. She says it's just because of plot and it's frustrating. They're handicapping her for no reason. It doesn't make sense. And she quotes what either you or I said, I think it was me, saying, let her betray everyone, take over, and cackle in their faces. That sounds like something I would say. And she says, yes, cosign. She also would pick Anatoly to move over to the good guys. She says she thinks John owes Dinah an apology, but as I said, Renee taints that whole scene because he is the one who started all of this. She also says she would be fine with NTA breaking up, but would be sad to lose Zoe if or when Renee goes. And she comments on the fact that we've had Barry on trial, now Oliver on trial, and it makes her wonder when Kara from Supergirl might be on trial.
Another good point.
And she goes on, just to point out the other comments about some of the feedback we got last week. She mentions Oliver hasn't apologized to Dinah. He apologized to the boys, but not to her like he should have. That is heightened this week because he actually goes and apologizes to Renee again. But still, nobody has apologized to Dinah, who arguably has done the least questionable stuff. Yeah, true. Renee betrayed them all. Curtis was a complete hypocrite because he got mad at them for doing something he did. All Dinah did was trust that Vince was good, and he was. Ish. Maybe we shouldn't have yelled at her and apologized to the boys, huh?
That in that end scene in one of the episodes when he shows up at her apartment at nighttime, though, did he not apologize then?
You know what? Maybe he did.
Yeah, or no, maybe he didn't apologize. He was just checking in on her to see how she's doing.
Yeah.
And that's why she got mad. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she says, for apologies, that sucks. And she got really angry about it. So, yeah, interesting. Well,
frankly, I don't really like the two of them working together. I think that's a conflict of leadership that doesn't work out well for a team. But I would be okay with not Diggle apologizing to her because she signed off on, them physically attacking Diggle. And Diggle was not the one who ever yelled at her in the first place. But I would be okay with them working together again because I quite liked that scene of them this episode where they both went and fought Dragon on the courtroom steps.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I was like, okay. I remember when this was kind of my Green Arrow, Black Canary, Diggle and Dinah thing. All right. I can see it.
Cool. And on the point that you mentioned, it would be actually kind of nice if NTA apologized to Diggle for hurting his arm the way they did.
Oh my God, right?
That would be cool. Yeah, if that comes up.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move into our favorite moments.
Yeah.
All right. I got two this week. I guess I actually got three, but there's one that I really can't play much of a sound clip for because it's just a bunch of smashing, crashing, grunting, moaning, oohing, and awing, but just like I said in the opening monologue, I loved when Tommy crashes through the roof of the courtroom. For the spoiler-free among us viewers, that was a jaw-dropping moment, because even the look on Oliver's face when Tommy revealed himself was just priceless. I was feeling the shock that he was exhibiting in his performance. It was just amazing. Loved that moment. Just loved it. I mean, it was a good heroic landing and everything too. So yeah, great, great scene. Mm-hmm. Of one of the many Stephen Amell scenes, because he was so good this episode, I'm going to go with the one when his lawyer straight up asks him if he is the Green Arrow and he just says, yes. I loved his matter-of-factness about it. I loved the confidence behind his words, which leads into him defending his stance on things. It's just a fantastic scene. So that's the one I'm going to play here for us.
Conventional wisdom says you never ask a client if they are guilty, because the more I know, the more it might tie my hands. But I am going to ask. Are you the Green Arrow?
Yes.
Then I'm going to propose a new strategy.
Okay.
Jury nullification.
Hmm?
You're going to admit to being the Green Arrow.
We are then going to highlight every single thing you have done for this city, all the times you have saved it. We will argue you do not deserve to go to prison. This is a legitimate chance, Oliver.
I can't do it.
Why not?
I'd be putting a target on my back. I'd be putting a target on my wife and son's back. I've been the Green Arrow for 6 years. I didn't plan on doing it forever. I thought that one day my mission would end and I would finally, after all this time, get a chance to actually live my life. That will never happen if I tell the whole world that I'm the Green Arrow.
See what I mean? That's Emmy right there.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear him talk about why he won't expose his identity.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of leads, I know we're going to bring this up a little later, but we're in the moment right now, and it kind of leads to the idea that maybe he will not reveal that he's Green Arrow, because we've been theorizing, is that what the big change for next season is? Are they gonna, the whole city's gonna know? But right mm-hmm. there, that really sounds like that's not the path they're gonna take, unless he's somehow forced into having to do it in another mm-hmm. twist. At this moment, after that scene, I don't think we're ever gonna know, or the city right. will ever know.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Or if the city did know, if they would side with him or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's play your scene, and then I got a little bonus one, a little fun one for the end. But what was your favorite scene here?
Well, my scene pretty much, I think we said it directly follows yours. It happens just a few moments later.
Mm-hmm.
It's when Oliver's still continuing on this, I guess, message of not wanting to do this forever. We get a continuation of what Oliver wants for his sort of future journey, safety for his family and to be there with them. And interestingly enough, and this is more of a visual component, so you won't get this from the audio clip, but there are also moments in this episode in the courtroom where they directly replicate shots from Moira Queen's trial. Namely, the Queen family hug is shot in the identical way where Moira is hugging Oliver and Thea. We see the exact same shot replicated when Oliver is hugging William and Felicity. So it's really interesting to see that.
Wow. Just
those little details.
Deep pull, Cam. Yeah, I wouldn't have remembered that.
Well, somebody on Twitter found it for me. So, but it was really interesting to see those lined up side by side. I'll try to pull that for you after the podcast so you can see the comparison of shots.
Cool.
But he's reminding us why he does what he does and why he's refusing to expose his identity for the sake of his family. And it's interesting to see what it is he wants when he says he wants to live his life. He just wants to be with his family, and he wants to have the mission of ending corruption in the city to end. Because, you know, I don't like giving Dragon credit, but I'll give Dragon some credit here. He is sort of based around this idea of city corruption, and that's the premise from season one. Oliver is going through the names in the book and right. ending all the people that his father said were corrupt in the city. So we've kind of returned to that original premise. And I think that's quite frustrating for Oliver to see that he's still doing the same thing 6 years later when he expected this to be a temporary mission. And just the fact that he expected it to be temporary is interesting. So
yeah,
my clip is him talking to the Mrs. Queen about it.
All right, here it is.
You don't have to testify. Jean doesn't have to call you.
Yes, she does. And I want to testify.
I don't want you in a position where you perjure yourself because of me.
Let me just add it to the long list of felonies I've already committed for you.
Look, Dawn has something planned. You don't have to take the chance.
I will take any chance if it keeps you from being taken away from me and William.
Court is back in session.
Here we go.
Thank you.
powerful stuff this episode.
Yeah.
Some really, really great moments.
Yeah. And kudos for them being able to emote that well with just whispering. I don't think that's very easy. So
very
get an extra gold star for that.
Yeah. No, but what you were saying, it really brings up interesting ideas that we're kind of coming full circle to his original mission about stopping corruption in the city. And just when he thought he was doing a good job of it, it seems to have exploded on him and it's at the worst it's ever been. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's frustrating. And, you know, to know that he's on his own at the moment and has to deal with everything that Dragon is doing and under his leadership as the mayor, this seems to have happened. He lost control of the city. So you can imagine how much pressure and frustration he's under right now. You guys may be upset for Oliver or the way he's handled the situation with the new team or whatever. I'm forgetting all of that because I'm really, really reeling for Oliver right now and what he's going through. If you draw it, like I said, just imagine the frustration and pressure he's under knowing that the city has gone to hell under his command. I can't imagine. Yeah. I feel for the guy.
Yeah, for sure.
They're really, really bringing this around to have us pull heavily for Oliver, not even just as fans of the show, but as if we are citizens of the city. I feel for Oliver Queen. It's crazy.
Yeah. Especially when they kind of tie it to everybody around him that he cares about and that cares about him. I know that that's often something they do on The Flash at times where we may not even be inclined to care about Barry. It's because everybody else cares about him. Mm-hmm. That we want them to be happy, we want them to be okay. And so we have this whole team and network around Oliver. And when he is in trouble, even if we don't particularly care about him one way or the other, we're drawn to do so because we may be rooting for the city or we may be rooting for the Queen family or we may be rooting for Team Arrow.
Yeah.
It kind of ties into the first question I have here in the discussion points. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about the trial, the idea of Oliver Queen versus Star City.
Okay. Well, before we get to that, I have a little bonus clip here. I'm not even going to talk about it. We'll say something after. I'm just going to play it, and I think everyone will know exactly what I mean when we play it. It's just such a fun little moment, but here's that one.
All right.
What will happen if Mr. Oliver goes to jail?
He's not going to jail, Raisa.
He's not the Green Arrow.
I think we both know better.
Don't we love Reza?
I love her so much.
She's known all along.
She has. And I think we kind of were clued in, even back in the pilot, that she could see straight through Oliver.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I love her. She's definitely a key member of the Queen family, I'd say.
She is now. All right, let's get to discussion points. Where are we going to start with?
Well, let's start with the trial. So this week we get to see Mr. Queen on trial for crimes he may or may not have committed while masquerading as the Hood, the Arrow, and the Green Arrow. So what did you think of the list of crimes the prosecution claimed he committed as mayor and vigilante?
You know what was hitting me when I was watching that is I was wondering, where the heck did they get all of that from? And then I'm thinking, was it Dragon? Did Dragon provide all this intel? Like it makes me wonder how, or they, it's just all the unanswered cases against the Hood and the Arrow, and now they're just grabbing all of it and trying to pin it on Oliver. That's what I'm wondering. Like, how many things are they actually pinning to Arrow that maybe isn't even his fault, just to make this situation sound worse? Because obviously the prosecution is under Dragon's control. So it sounds like they're piling it up to me to make it worse than it actually is. That's what was running through my head during that.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of had the opposite take. I was sort of scratching my head being like, oh yeah, no, he did all those things. Like a lot of them.
A lot of them, yeah.
For good reason.
A lot of them for good reason.
Like there was always a justification, you know, when they had things like, you know, killing somebody without due process. It was sort of like, yeah, but he sort of had to because of this, that, or the other. Like if he had taken them in, they would have gotten away. Or he had no choice but to kill them because they were about to kill him. Or, you know, the funds issue, he had to transfer the funds or else the whole city was going to die and there was a bomb threat. You know, right. there was always this justification, but it was sort of like, yeah, he sort of did. Even leading up to that, in the last or the second to last clip that we just listened to, where Felicity says, you know, just add it to the list of felonies I've committed for you. It was like, well, yeah, everybody from Team Arrow has committed a lot of felonies. They've all gone around the law. You know, Dinah lost her job as a police officer because she was breaking rules as a police officer. And it was like, it's for good reason, but it's hard to get somebody to understand that. Argus is an entirely, you know, sort of non-legal entity that Diggle and Lila are part of. Curtis has done tons of hacking and, you know, corporate felony level type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Renee, of course, we've talked about his origins as sort of street justice. His crimes are probably quite similar to the crimes Oliver committed as the Hood. You know, we could go on and on, but they've sort of done this. It's just the fact that we're rooting for them because they've done it for a good reason, or there's been a good outcome, or it's been the necessary thing to do.
Right.
Did you expect him to get off free? Did you expect him to be ruled as guilty? What did you think?
Yeah, like I expected there to be no way for Oliver to get out of this. I think that's what we all expected. Dragon has everybody under control, including the judge, including probably most of the jury. I think going into this, and as it was progressing along, people, viewers, all thought there's no way Oliver's getting out of this. He's going to jail. We're going to have a big jailbreak scene or something in the finale episode. I'm guaranteeing probably 99% of us all thought that's where it was going. I did not expect it to be overturned by the judge like that.
Before
we found out it was Chase, that moment was fantastic because it just seemed like, oh my God, Oliver has one person in the civil system that is on his side that has not been bought out by a dragon. This is fantastic. It was such a cool moment. But then, you know, just because he turned, it ended up becoming Chase, then it ended up being even more fun. It was a more fun scene, so that was great. The jury coming to a guilty decision kind of surprised me because I thought that the first Chase trick worked when he came in as Tommy. I thought it was gonna win the case over at that point. I'm like, okay, this right. is good. This could work. But then, of course, Dragon has control of the jury, and that just is proven by the fact that, you know, they come to a unanimous guilty decision, no matter what evidence they just presented. I mean, you've got the Green Arrow standing there in the courtroom, so it didn't seem to matter. They were going to give him a guilty verdict no matter what. So obviously, they are on his payroll. So yeah, it was a great sequence of twists that happened. There was like three or four of them back to back to back, and it was a fantastic sequence. So my expectations were changing every time something new was presented.
Yeah. It was sort of like a new human target was in this episode. So in the back of my mind, I guess I expected him to take on at least two different faces because, you know, otherwise it's kind of a waste to have him in. But I was totally sucked in when they had the judge rule him innocent.
I got you too.
The idea that it was human target did not even cross my mind. Mm-hmm. And all of that was all of my expectation that he would be ruled guilty, first of all, and that everybody was corrupt, was based on the fact that Dragon sort of had his fingers in everything, judge, jury, everything. And it made the whole trial feel a bit helpless. So it made that twist at the end where he got off free kind of unexpected. But Dragon also actually showed up in and around the courtroom himself, which he didn't even have to do to create the ominous feeling. What did you think of his physical presence in this episode?
Well, I like how you described the whole scene, that it felt helpless, because it really did. When Dragon did show up, that just drove the nail deep that this is hopeless. You're not getting out of this kind of thing. It shows how much of the city he has under his thumb. It's crazy. And I thought that was just as equally a bold move, like a couple episodes when we saw him sitting at a desk in the SCPD. It shows his power over the city, And yet no one really knows who he is. Like, he just waltzed in there, and I don't think, other than people directly under his command, I don't think a lot of people even know what he looks like or who he is. So it's a pretty good setup that he has. And that helpless feeling, they really sunk that in great here, that it was bleak for Oliver. It really was.
Mm-hmm. The final thing, and we kind of already talked a little bit about this, but the presence of Human Target throughout this episode kind of served as a foil for Dragon. Because Dragon, again, like you said, creates this feeling of bleakness, this inevitability. You kind of assume that he's going to win. They've kind of set that up for him. Mm-hmm. Human Target comes in as sort of the ultimate foil, in that he can do things that Dragon doesn't expect or understand because he can take on any physical form. So it's sort of Dragon's the ultimate bad, and Human Target's not the ultimate good, but the ultimate foil. How did you respond to him being around throughout this episode?
Yeah, that I'm pretty sure, based on what you just said, that Dragon doesn't know Human Target, right? Doesn't know who he is or what he is, or that there's a, you know, another hero out there in the world like that. So that, you know, that really let us know he doesn't know anything about him. And right. It seems like his knowledge of everything is just within Star City. So beyond that, yeah, he wouldn't have known about Human Target, which is really cool. And I loved having Human Target in this. I'd like to see him come around more often and help the team out. Like, if we could get him, you know, 5 or 6 appearances per season, I think it'd be really cool, because he's really, really helpful. And I mean, I loved the 2 seasons of the actual Human Target TV show we had a couple of years ago.
Right.
It was a fantastic show, and it's unfortunate it came out at a time when superhero TV wasn't the, you know, as big and popular as it is right now. It kind of came out on its own show, and I don't think anybody even related to it that it was a DC comic superhero. They just thought it was some cool spy TV show and some guy goes undercover all the time disguised as someone else. I don't think anybody connected it to being a comic book show,
right?
Which I think would have helped it, because it was really, really good. It was well done. The action was great. The humor was spot on, and the cast was amazing. So if any of you listeners out there did not watch Human Target, see if you can find it. You can get a hold of me behind the scenes if you want, because I do actually have it. One of the coolest things I thought, I can't remember if it was season 1 or season 2, maybe it was season 2, but it had, I think, one of the coolest opening sequences, like music and credits as the show is being introduced, that I've ever seen on TV. It's just fantastic kind of paintings being painted across the screen as people's names are coming up. It was just a beautiful opening sequence. So anyway, yeah, I love the Human Target. I think he's cool. I wish I hope that they bring him around more often and continue to use the same actor. That way there's no discontinuity to it. So yeah, I liked it. What did you? Did you enjoy him?
I did. I find him to be a bit overpowered in some instances, but I also think, in general, but in this episode in particular, they strongly overpowered Dragon to the point it almost seemed a bit desperate. They were just ascribing power to him to try to make him seem evil and like somebody that we should fear, whatever. Mm-hmm. And because of that, Human Target made an excellent foil once again. Not the opposition, not the hero necessarily, but a good foil to, I would say, a problem that they've created for themselves, which is that they've ascribed a lot of skills to one person to where it's unrealistic. And I think that it should have been more of a corrupt network is the villain this season rather than just one person. And so they needed to have just one person, like Human Target, who is also overpowered, to be a foil. But I don't know. That's just, I'm having issues now, not necessarily with Dragon himself, but with the fact that I think he should be a concept represented by multiple people, a corrupt network, a corrupt gang, I guess, taking over the city, rather than just one person. They've overpowered him to the point that it's not realistic. And we'll talk about that in the end, in the last discussion point where we talk about him facing off against Siren. But I'm not so sure I like the way they're presenting him, but we'll see.
See, I think a few episodes ago, you brought this up before and I tried to counter you. I don't feel that it's him. It's not him that has all these abilities and intelligences and things that he's doing. I don't think it's one man. It's the fact that he is that mob boss type of bad guy. He has everybody under his control. He pays out or hires or uses fear tactics or whatever to get everybody to do the work for him. I don't think he does everything. He's the man in charge, but he's got everybody doing everything for him. So if he needs some guy to create a chemical, he goes to a chemical lab, holds the guy's family hostage and says, make me this chemical. So the guy does. If he needs a guy that knows weapons, he does something to get control, or he says, look it, I'll give you 50% of all everything that we get. You work for me and give me your guns. And the guy says, sure, 50%, that's a great deal. Like I think he's a great, I don't know what you would call it, like business owner, but it's like a business network that he runs. That he's
right.
He's
got everybody working for him. No, I get that. That's what they're trying to sell me. I'm saying it's unrealistic that nobody shot him. It's unrealistic in this episode, certainly, that nobody shot him. If, for example, Diggle and Dinah are willing to attack him outside the courtroom, why did they not shoot him? If Siren had a gun, why did she not shoot him? In all of these instances where he is blackmailing people like that and blackmailing half the city. When people blackmail half the city like that, they sure enough are going to end up shot by the next weekend. Somebody's not just going to take it. Somebody's not just going to roll over.
That to me is just people being scared. I think most people are scared. Whatever it is they have over him, they're either too scared to do anything. And that's why we have heroes, because heroes are the ones that are not scared to do something about it. Otherwise, there's no point in having heroes. If every Joe Blow on the street is going to stand up to the villain, then what do you need a hero for?
But I think, but it's... The fear response is the response of killing him. That's not the heroic response necessarily. That's the fearful response. He blackmails the wrong business owner, and rather than that business owner going along with it, they'll go along with it, and then they'll hire somebody to kill him, or they'll go kill him himself. Because he's human. He's mortal. He's not a meta. The fact that in the end, and I know we're kind of skipping to this last plot point, but the fact that in the end a meta wasn't able to kill him is ridiculous. That is... absolutely ridiculous. The fact that it went down in the span of time that it did, in the way that it did, after they've built up this plot point for so many episodes, the whole Siren, is she siding with Dragon or is she turning on him? The fact that they had her turn on him and that whole thing went down in like 2 minutes, she wasn't able to do it because he had a dampener to her powers. She didn't just shoot him. She didn't just like... how did that make it out of the writing room? I don't understand. And it's fine if he survived it. It's fine if he had a master plan of some kind. Like, by all means, like, explain to me, you know, how he had a master plan to get out of it, how this meta, who he's, you know, ostensibly been in bed with multiple times, who's had every opportunity to kill him, you know, tell me what it was that he had that was this constant protection from her. Because, you know, what they ended up giving me was he just has some sort of sound dampener that he forgot to even turn on right away. He just had it sort of at the end. And it's like, that's not showing me a masterminded villain. A masterminded villain would have had something, you know, some sort of fail-safe implanted into her, or, you know, some sort of ultimate control. And I'd be like, wow, that's really smart. He's had that there this whole time. She never had a chance to kill him. But what we were told is that she did have a chance to kill him, and that, she, you know, he just had this little dampener. And if she had just gotten off a scream earlier, she would have killed him. And that doesn't make me respect him more as a villain. It gives him just sort of this luck opportunity moment where he was able to get it off at the last second, and it's just overpowering by circumstance rather than powering by actual, you know, mastermind nature that he's supposed to have. I don't know. Sorry, I went on the whole last third point ahead of time, but
that's, well, we're there now, so I'm gonna
we are.
We're gonna continue talking about this. See, I'm gonna actually defend it a little bit, because although I understand where you're coming from, I don't fully agree on it, because you have to tear the scene down. She was across the yard from him, so her first attack is only going to throw him. It's kind of like gives her the upper hand. So she screams across the yard, sends him flying, and then she moved in for the kill. She went up, grabbed him, and was about to do the you know, scream into his ear, melt his brain kind of thing. But he was prepared because the initial attack didn't fully knock him out. She sent him flying. But Dragon's a pretty tough guy. He got thrown into a bunch of pipes or whatever, and so he wasn't fully out. And he was ready. And I don't mind him having this dampening tool because he obviously always carries it in his pocket. It's just, you know, he presses the button, it works. It's a protection that he always had. And I look at it as, he's got these plans in place. He's always three steps ahead of everyone. And we got the moment that we wanted. We wanted to see Siren turn, and she did turn. She made that decision. And he was always waiting for it because he's always kind of suspected her in so many sequences beforehand. He's always suspected her getting a soft spot for Lance and everything. So he's already been ready, and I didn't necessarily need to see it. I didn't need to see him working on the device. I didn't need to see anything. He's just, I trusted that he had a plan already because they've continually showed us that he's three steps ahead of everybody. So yeah, she got off her first attack, but then that gave him enough time to prepare and turn the device on, which, because she was going in for the kill shot, she just didn't have the time. And yeah, she's powerful. Yeah, she could do it. But from a distance, I don't think she can kill people. I think
she had a gun in her hand. Like, we saw that. We know she had a gun.
She shot some of the guys. She screamed first.
Why did she not shoot him as he was walking away from her?
We'd have to look at that scene again. I'm sure at that point she was disarmed. I don't think she was no longer holding the gun at that point.
She still had a gun. She could have thrown a knife. She's got like a whole suit with like knives strapped to her thighs. He's not wearing like a bulletproof helmet. He's not a meta. He doesn't have a force field.
Yeah, but again, you're attributing way too much credit to her. He just shut her down her siren call. So she's immediately in a state of shock, like, oh my God, my metahuman power is gone. I'm helpless at the moment. She's not thinking, I think that just had her confused and
not sure what to do. Like that's exactly what they were writing for her. Mm-hmm. But why? She's not some, 12-year-old girl confused during a fight for the first time. She's an evil mastermind as well. She's a meta. She's been doing this for ages. She's not even from this earth. She's far stronger than him, a fact that he's acknowledged many times. And it's not even really about her because, as much as I obviously have a soft spot for female villains, Siren is not anywhere near my favorite female villain, especially the way they're writing her. But even aside from her, guns exist in this world. Anybody could just be a sniper and take him out at any moment.
Yeah, but he doesn't have
some sort of like the North Korean president, this like group that travels with him and clears out snipers ahead at every time. Like Diggle and Dinah were able to jump him from behind. They could have just pulled out a gun and shot him in the head if they had wanted to.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think anyone working for him wants to. Everybody is corrupt and villainous. They don't want to because they control the city under his reign. As for Diggle and Siren, that they're heroes. They're not going to shoot him. They're not going to kill him. They're going to try to apprehend him, and that's what they tried to do. And they couldn't.
Well, she wanted to kill him. Siren did.
Siren did, yeah. But Dinah and Diggle did not.
Diggle and Siren.
Yeah, Diggle and...
You meant Diggle and Dinah,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
So they, they were just trying to apprehend him. So it failed because he's got the city under his control, the entire police force pretty much. So yeah, to me, I wasn't bothered by it. I thought it was fine that the way it played out. I just think he's three steps ahead of everybody every time. He's got everything in place and ready. Yeah. This isn't the first time we've seen him in a situation where he's been taken out. I mean, Siren took him out. Then she walked up for the kill shot. He also got taken out, two episodes ago when it was the dragon?
The fight with Oliver.
Well, the fight with Oliver, but also when they went to spring that guy from protective custody and the limousine pulls up and they shot him. Well, good thing he was wearing a bulletproof vest. Otherwise, he was also done there. So yeah, he's not metahuman. He's not superpowered at all. He can be taken out and people have tried, but he's always prepared. Sure, go for a headshot, but nobody has. So that's the thing. And I think, and if you're talking snipers, there's just nobody that wants to do it. That otherwise, you know, it weakens his power as a mob boss over the, you know, with the control that he has. Nobody wants to. Everyone that's working for him by choice wants to work for him, so they're not going to try to kill him. And anyone that's going to stand up to him are really only the heroes, and, you know, they don't kill.
Which is where Siren came in, and she wasn't able to.
She wasn't able to.
That's what I'm struggling with. The fact that she wasn't able to and the explanation for it. I would understand if she wasn't able to and they had written me a good explanation. The dampener thing, not sold on that. She still had a gun. Like, she could have shot him in the back of the head. But it's, you know, beating a dead horse. We'll see what happens. She still might go after him.
Well, I almost want to revisit that scene just to see where the after when he turned on the dampener, I'm not sure where the gun was.
Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of curious about.
When I was talking about it after that scene afterwards, on the after show, the person I was talking to pointed out that Black Siren is supposed to have all of the same martial arts and fighting skills as Black Canary. Because, you know, she's another Earth version of her. So that's kind of another thing I'm struggling with, that Richard Dragon versus, you know, another Earth version of Black Canary. Are we really supposed to believe that Dragon would win in even just a hand-to-hand martial arts combat with her? Because Dragon lost to Green Arrow in a hand-to-hand fight. He had to pull a knife, which is fine. Like, we could say that's how he wins.
He was beat, yeah.
And Black Canary should be able to beat Green Arrow in a martial arts fight. Martial arts is her thing. And again, I'm just sort of referring to the comics here. The show could change that if they want. But actual Black Canary could beat actual Green Arrow in martial arts combat. So we can only assume, and again, he would probably just pull a knife on her as well, that Siren, who should have all of the martial arts skills of the Canary, would be able to also stand up to him quite well in a hand-to-hand combat fight, even outside of her meta powers, at least to the point where she might be able to wrestle the dampener away from him. I don't know. Okay, and again, I'm adding things to it that, A, that may not be the take that the show wants to take. You know, maybe this Siren doesn't have the Black Canary martial arts powers. Maybe that's just not the approach they want to take. And that's fine. I guess these are just sort of the questions I was left with after that fight.
Well, you have to remember that, like, this is why I don't like it when people bring the comics into play too much, as the TV show is a different type of entertainment. We are not following the comic books. They're not making a TV show of the comic books. You have to look at it like the TV show is. I think you brought it up at our expo panel. The TV show is just a different telling of the Green Arrow story. It's not a retelling. It's not It's not a video version of the comics or of the cartoons. It's a new telling of the story. So they can go in any direction they want. They can write the characters and the powers in whatever way they want. And yeah, maybe the Siren isn't as hand to hand trained. But now. While you were talking, I pulled up the scene and I watched it closely to see what happened. Yes, she screamed at him. She shot a few guys. She went up to grab him and scream in his ear. He turned on the device. Then he backhands her and the gun goes flying out of her hand. So she's now disarmed.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then when he gets up and he's got her by the scuff of the shirt and he's shaking her around, two other soldiers that she didn't take out show up behind her with machine guns in hand. So she's dead to rights. She cannot fight them. She's got guns pointed at her and the device turned on. So she's pretty much outgunned and outmanned right there. She submits, obviously.
Do you think that she's taken into custody after that, or does he just let her go?
Yeah, well, that's the next question. We don't know what's going to happen with her. He obviously can't trust her. I'm assuming or guessing that he's probably going to keep her locked up. And I'm guessing, or should I say predicting, that Lance tries to rescue her and doesn't survive the rescue attempt. But she will get free and maybe help Team Arrow take him down, only to leave after and be on her own, which is what I think the we're hoping for, that she does take off to be at least, at the very least, an anti-hero, if not be her own villain. The question that comes to me after that, though, is, does Dragon get taken out this season, or does he survive only to come back another time?
That's what I've heard, a lot of speculation that he'll be the villain for season 7 as well. Would you like that?
Well, I wonder where that speculation comes from. That would give it a chance to deepen his story and flesh out the Dragon storyline, and maybe make a lot of these fans that are still on the fence about it maybe appreciate him as a villain more. I think I would be okay with it. Maybe they'll bring him, they'll continue on as the first half of season 7, because it seems like that might be what they're doing, is splitting villains up half seasons here. So maybe he'll begin season 7 and they'll take him out, and we'll have a new villain for the latter half of season 7. Who knows? I don't know. I would be okay with it, because, like I said, it'd allow us to deepen his story a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously,
yeah, we haven't really had him explored for very many episodes. I'm kind of torn, because I think that we need to explore his motivation, skills, etc. I want better, but I don't want more.
Well, look at it this way, too. I mean, look at the depth of the corruption in the city right now. He's got almost the entire city within his grip. So wouldn't it, we have 2 episodes left, would it not seem like too quick and too easy, too wrapped up in a pretty little Christmas bow, if Arrow is somehow able to solve the entire city's corruption in 2 episodes?
Yeah, it would. Because taking out Dragon, in my mind, in my mind, taking out Dragon is super easy. Just shoot the guy in the head. It's not that deep. Like, I don't understand. Like, not to be salty Cammy, but here I am. Like, just shoot him. Everybody has a gun in that city, apparently. Like, surely somebody wants to, like, turn on him. But it's the corruption that you're talking about. That is what I have no idea how they would solve that. Mm-hmm. And especially because Star City is supposed to be Oliver's city, and he's supposed to be the mayor, and that kind of corruption has spread under his watch. That is the true villain here. That is the true... Right. Problem to be solved, and that seems quite difficult to solve and can't be solved by just shooting somebody or whatever. And it, you know, whatever, I'm a pacifist, I don't want him shot any more than anybody else does, but it's a fictional character, and just, you know, shoot the guy in the head. It just doesn't solve the problem, though, of the corruption in the city.
See, and that could bring us full circle back to season 1, where his mission now is going after everybody that's corrupt in the city. And that could maybe be what season 7 is about. Although they're telling us that season 7, we're going to be doing something that's never been done before. It's a new president for Arrow. We'll have to see what they're talking about. But that could be an underlying storyline, is back to season 1 type of arcs, I guess you could say, where he's taking out, you know, corrupt people of the city one by one. We'll have to see. I mean, I don't know how exciting that would be. Obviously, there'd have to be other villains coming and going. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about heroes a little bit.
Yeah, we've touched on quite a lot of this already, but let's go through this, because there's a lot of interesting team dynamics in this episode. So my first question for you has to do with the testifying in court situation. Our heroes had to kind of come together to testify for or against Oliver. Did you have any favorite or least favorite moments from the team testimonies?
Well, it's kind of funny. Both Dinah and Renee slipped up a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah, just a little. I mean, in different ways.
In different ways, yeah. I mean, Dinah was kind of cornered into giving away too much. And then in calling on the Fifth Amendment or whatever that was, she kind of basically showed her hand. And Renee, you can't really blame him here, because...
Oh, of course not.
I mean, Dragon walks in with Zoe with his hands pretty much all over her. It really makes it impossible for Renee to do anything in that moment. You can't really hold him accountable at all for that moment, for giving in. You can't. And I'll be upset with any listener that is upset with Renee giving in, because it's really not fair. Right. There was nothing he could do in that exact situation right there.
There's a kid in play. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems there's so much evidence Dragon has his hands on, that there's no way Renee or Dinah or anyone could really cover for Oliver. Dragon's just got too much. So, yeah, I don't know if I really had a favorite moment in the testimony. I had a favorite moment when we first saw Dinah come on screen in that yellow, in that silver-colored sweater, but, you know.
Well, I had some thoughts about Dinah's testimony, actually. Mm-hmm. So she's going in and she's willing to perjure herself for Oliver, right? For the team, I guess, as it were. So I was kind of confused at first why she would not just deny whatever the prosecution was accusing her of. Did you kill so-and-so, you know? And so at first that was confusing to me. And then I realized she's willing to perjure herself to protect somebody else, but she's not willing to perjure herself to protect herself. So that was kind of cool. That's a good heroic trait. I'll give her a little gold star for that.
Yeah.
Renee's testimony, I was frustrated with Curtis over that. And let me tell you why.
Okay.
Curtis was not called on to testify. Everybody on the team was already talking before the trial about if anything goes down. You know, first of all, Felicity and William were there and they had security and the whole team around them because we knew Dragon would go after them. Dragon's already gone after Zoe before. Mm-hmm. Why was she by herself at school at all? They had all talked about moving everybody into Argus protective custody. Why was Curtis not watching Zoe? Like, that was his one thing, was that he took care of Zoe when Renee was not around. Why was he in court at all? Hmm. He wasn't called upon. He should have been the one person doing security detail, or at least, you know, like keeping, you know, tracking GPS in Zoe's phone, or, you know, that was confusing to me. But that's Curtis's fault, not Renee's. Curtis, I do have some thoughts on Renee, but it has nothing to do with his testimony.
Curtis, you have failed this Zoe.
So one of the things as well that we again talked a little bit about this, the episode starting with Diggle pre-planning and going on the mission to extract human target and bring him in for the job. So maybe the brotherhood between Diggle and Oliver is still intact.
Yeah. Well, I think this episode really showed that when push comes to shove, they're all going to come together to save Oliver, no matter what they think of him as a leader. He has done so much for them, and they all appreciate what he's tried to do as the mayor. And they do have bonds of friendship as teammates, you know, former teammates or whatever. There, it doesn't matter. I tried bringing this up before. There's this underlying friendship that is there, this underlying understanding that they are all heroes trying to help the city. So I think everything, all their issues and problems got pushed aside when they saw what personally was happening to Oliver. And it became very personal for them that, whoa, okay, this has gone way too far. Doesn't matter that we don't agree with his leadership. He has been our friend. We cannot allow this to happen to him. Look, because of everything he's been trying to do for the city. And I think everything just got shoved aside. They've got to help him. And yeah, there is that underlying brotherhood. There's that underlying friendship. Just being human beings, all with the same goal in mind, saving the city. That's, I totally, totally liked all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was cool seeing the team come together. It was cool seeing everybody in one room. I feel differently about each different character, but that's okay. That's how we're supposed to be. They're not supposed to all be carbon copies of each other. I will say, okay, I've got two little salty cami moments, but I feel like I've maxed out the allowed salty cami for one episode.
You've reached your quota.
I have. Well, here it goes anyways. So, number one, when the team arrived to the courtroom, the new team, so Dinah, Curtis, and Renee, and that was the first sort of reunion that we see, and Felicity and William kind of greet them, and she thanks them for coming and thanking, you know, thanks them for their support and everything that they're, you know, there. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of the reverse of another thing, of another scene, because they're there, you know, to support Oliver and of course the team. But it reminded me of the scene where Felicity and Diggle go to the hospital to make sure Renee's okay. And rather than Dinah and Curtis thanking them for their support and thanking them for coming, they yelled at them, told them they were awful, and told them to go away. Mm-hmm. So I just found it interesting that that wasn't the response that OTA had when NTA shows up to something that, by their own admission and by Renee's own admission, I guess I should say, is a problem he caused himself. That's something he admits in the beginning of this episode, which kudos to him for even verbalizing that.
Yeah.
It's a problem they caused themselves, just like Renee being in the hospital was caused by Oliver. They show up and they're thanked and they're treated with respect, exactly how we would want them to be, because it was nice of them to come. But I found the contrast of those two scenes interesting. The whole higher road, bigger people thing was there.
Yeah, well, that pulls on what you and some of our feedbackers were drawing on in previous episodes, that, you know, Oliver Diggle and Felicity are definitely the bigger people when it comes to this childish, you know, yeah, squabbling they've been having.
Clearly, I am not the bigger person.
Like. but I will call upon, like, if you look at this scene, this courtroom is not them against each other. This is the corruption of the city and Dragon against Oliver, which they are all trying to stop. So it's a common enemy that they're facing with. So yeah, they're there to support Oliver. And yeah, Felicity is thankful that they're there because of the underlying friendships. The scene in the hospital a long time ago, that was about them against each other. And Oliver was the one who hurt Renee and put him in the hospital. And it had just happened. So there was still all of the tension and anger and everything in it. So that is why Dinah and, you know, Curtis were like, get out of here. You guys don't belong here. Because it was a personal team against team thing. This is a whole different scene. So I understand how you're comparing the two, but I more understand that it's a different situation, and the way it played out is totally the way I think it should have played out.
Yeah. You can see now why Flash is the hero and I'm the villain in this. It's a pretty consistent way of looking at things. Where do you think the team all now kind of stands with each other? What do you expect from them in the next two episodes in terms of working together or not?
Well, I mean, despite all the hate and the angst towards what happened between the teams that we've had previously, I actually liked how it was handled this episode. Everyone was getting past the finger pointing and admitting their own parts in all of it and apologizing. I mean, even Renee came around and apologized, and it was great. There was no frustrating attitudes or anything like that. It was very, let's just get past this now and move on, because we're against a common enemy that's trying to take the city down.
Right.
For them and for us as the viewers, let's just get past it. Let's forget about the squabbling. And I think it was great. I mean, it's hard to say. I still think the three-team aspect will stay intact for a while. I don't think they're going to fully come together and be Team Arrow yet. I mean, I love the scene at the end with Oliver shaking Renee's hand. And, you know, they've kind of put their differences aside. It doesn't tell me that they're getting together as a team again. It just tells me that they're no longer going to fight each other and the squabbling is past them. But the three teams are still going to work separately after a common goal. They're going to work as three teams, but work together to stop the corruption of the city. And I'm okay with all of that.
Yeah. And I think it's important, especially in contrast to what Oliver was saying this episode about him not wanting to do this mission forever. Mm-hmm. And yet the city seems to continue to need help forever.
Yeah.
So it seems like there will need to be other entities, whether that be NTA, whether that be Argus and Diggle and Lila working together and all of that to help the city or what the city represents, which is just sort of society as a whole.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we'll have to see what they do in the next two episodes with all of this.
Yeah.
Man, I just say now, like, two episodes left. Holy cow.
Right?
All right. Let's get to our transmission, see what feedback for this episode is. I'm actually really curious which way it went.
Yeah. I want to hear, like, where other thoughts are between the sort of dichotomy of your thoughts, my thoughts, and then the areas where you and I agreed.
Right. Here we go. All right, we are going to start off with an email from Christy. And Christy says, I love this episode from start to finish. I have always enjoyed courtroom scenes, and this one was really compelling for a few reasons. Number one, The opposing lawyer is a fantastic actress who really sold her scenes well. She also had fantastic evidence and reasoning as to why Oliver should be convicted.
Yeah.
Point two, Renee being coerced by Diaz in plain sight by unbeknownst to the jury was riveting. The sight of Zoe literally underneath Diaz's thumb was chilling. Also, I have to give Rick Gonzalez credit for portraying the anguish so well. I wish he had been given more like that to do over the course of the season instead of all the snarky disses at Team Arrow.
Yes, strongly agree.
Exactly. And I'm glad some people are starting to not come around, but, you know, give him a little bit of acknowledgement for his portrayal and stuff like that. Because I can't imagine what it would be like as an actor to see so much hate towards a character you play. I guess he has fun with it, but it still bothers me for the poor guy.
Yeah, he's been pretty fun and has a good attitude about it. I mean, I assume if you are playing a character that's ambiguous or does bad things or is a villain or is a hero but does controversial things, you want that backlash because that means you're doing a good job enough to get people feeling about it. And he seems to kind of revel in it, which is nice.
True. Point three, Tommy. It's always a treat to see him, even if it's very brief. I love that Oliver didn't know which face Human Target would wear. Yeah, I, again, one of my favorite moments. It's pretty sad that Black Siren showed more loyalty to the Oliver in this episode than the newbies have all season. And she's a villain. It's a shame that she waited so long to blast Diaz with her cry. She could have killed him when he first cornered her about testifying or literally any other point. But then I guess that would have ended the season too soon. The writer should have established that Diaz had the sonic dampener much earlier so as to eliminate that giant plot hole. Boy, she's kind of thinking like you are. Once Tommy broke free, I thought Human Target's job was over. That was such a great twist. However, that poor judge lost his life in such an unfair way. Yeah, we didn't even bring that up. That's true. The dragon kind of just shot him. Plain as day.
I mean, he was corrupt, but that was really sad to see regardless.
Maybe Diggle should have taken him to safety at Argus. Yeah, true. I'm really happy that everyone was able to set aside all of the grievances with Oliver and come together to help set him free, albeit illegally. At the start of this season, I never would have guessed that I would enjoy William this much, but I'm glad to be proven wrong. His scenes with Oliver and Felicity have been so strong lately. Yeah, very good. They got a good child actor. I mean, his performance isn't always the greatest, but he's in the scene and he's in the right emotion and it feels like a family. Like they've done really, really well with him.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always happen with child actors. So, but yeah, thank you, Christy, for that awesome email. Next up, we got another voicemail from Amanda Tavares. Curious what she says this time.
Hey, Arrow Squad. This is Amanda Tavares here, and I promise I won't be bitter this time, and I'll speak way slower than the last time because I heard myself. Wow. I'm such a fast talker, but I'll do better right now. Did you catch the Easter egg on the episode's title? Loved it. I love this episode so much. It was so intense. Seeing Tommy with all that sass brought me real Ollie Queen from the comics feelings, and Stephen Amell's performance at seeing him, so emotional. He's a great actor. His scenes with Felicity and William were also marvelous. Basically, everybody brought their A+ performance. I was in awe. I especially liked the scene in which Oliver and his lawyer talk about outing himself. I thought her plan was brilliant, but then Oliver started saying that he wanted a life after being Green Arrow, and that made so much sense too. I was truly torn. My nitpickings would be Diaz calling Laurel baby. That's so creepy. And then he called Diggle that. No, just no, stop. And Zoe being on school alone while her dad was on court. I really think Renee forgets he's a dad sometimes. I have two kids. I can comprehend how you forget your kid. So weird. She'd be better off without him. But all in all, one of my favorite episodes where plot and character walk together as they should. And for season 7, I really wish Oliver would take his family and get out of this ungrateful town. Go to Seattle like on the comics and just be done with this crap. They don't deserve you, Oliver. Leave Star City to the NTA and start anew. That's it. Beijinhos, Amanda.
Aww. I love her.
I love her voice and her accent. That's just, yes. You can call in anytime and just speak for half an hour. That'd be great.
Yes, absolutely. She also had some really good points about the episode. I loved her reference to the fact that in the comics, Oliver and his crew, they do move to Seattle for a while. And they do leave that ungrateful city, which is exactly what I was suggesting last week. Mm-hmm. Why does he need to be protecting Star City? What has the city ever done for him?
Yeah, it is such a good point, Amanda, that she brings that up, because you're kind of feeling that right now. Like, what has the city done for him other than the end of season 4 when they back him to take down Damian Dark? That was the last time the city really accepted him and stood up for him and appreciated him. This mm-hmm. season and part of last season, they have not. And yeah, get his family out of there, you know, leave the city behind and see how they do without him. And then maybe they will appreciate him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Well, thank you, Amanda. Just wonderful to hear from you. Next is an email from I'm Just Here for Felicity. And what does she have to say?
Well, she opens and she is totally on your side about the opening episode, like, scene with Diggle being a super soldier. She says, I enjoy John Diggle, but a super soldier he is not. So that opening just left me laughing more than in awe.
Exactly. Thank you.
I'm going to have to rewatch that because I did not find that cheesy, and I tend to find things cheesy, but
it's super cheesy.
I bet you guys are going to sway me over on that one. So she goes on to say, for all its pluses, one of Arrow's negatives is definitely the constant fights. Too little, too late is all I can say about Renee. Had they had him say things like this earlier and apologize for some of the stuff, I might buy a redemption for him. But as is, I'm ready for him to go. I feel for Ricky. He's doing a great job acting, but they've written Renee so badly, no redemption is possible. She goes on to say, well, I have some thoughts on Renee, but I'll save it to the end of her feedback. She says, couldn't Oliver just get double jeopardy on his case, given Roy was revealed to be Arrow before Oliver was under investigation? I wonder if the docket number means anything. Well, it does. We went over that earlier.
That's interesting, though, the double jeopardy idea. That kind of came up to me too in my thoughts. I was thinking, how can he be on trial? But maybe he never really was fully on trial in previous. It was just allegations. So,
yeah. Or it's just a matter of the corruption causing things to happen that shouldn't happen.
Exactly.
She says Catherine Dent is killing it in this episode. I think she's referring to the prosecution. Mm-hmm. She says, if Diaz wanted Oliver in jail, why not just put him there without a trial, given he has everyone in his pocket? Also, she says, I so hope evil Laurel kills Diaz. She goes on back about Renee. She says, I'm actually really glad Renee told the truth, because had he found a way to lie, it would have felt like all the tension from previous episodes was just filler and overall pointless. Seriously, what did Dinah and John think would happen? And then Felicity with smug glasses cleaning. I love it. Referring to Felicity cleaning her glasses while being an expert witness. She also says, it's great seeing Colin, but it does make me miss Tommy/Laurel. Also, Quentin being the motivation for evil Laurel to take on Dragon just made me want to throw up, because it felt like a real step back for her. She has her own reasons to take him out without involving Quentin, and I'm just very let down by the Laurel story this episode. I'm definitely excited to see what Cammy says about the Oliver Renee apology scene. Good episode overall. I would have given it a great, but the poorly handled evil Laurel plot in this episode. Well, I strongly agree. Let me tell you my thoughts on the Renee situation.
What does Oliver Renee mean to Cammy?
The apology. Okay. I have no problem with Renee testifying against Oliver for two reasons. One is the reason she mentioned, if he didn't testify against Oliver, it would have made this whole angst and drama since the mid-season finale where he betrayed him to be all for nothing. So of course he has to. Two, the reason that you named, the fact that Zoe is in danger. If a kid's in danger, you gotta do what you gotta do. Of course, we put the kid first. Mm-hmm. That is not what I have a problem with Renee in this episode. The problem that I have with Renee in this episode is that there's two people that were pretty key to getting Oliver freed. First one is Diggle, who actually went on a mission to another country, as hokey as that fight scene may have been, to go get Human Target. That was pretty smart to go get Human Target. Mm-hmm. That was exactly what this episode needed. That was smart on Diggle's part. And then that's also just a very smart writing choice to add Human Target to an episode like that. So kudos to everybody involved in that decision. The second person responsible is Human Target himself. He was able to masquerade effectively as Tommy, and he was able to masquerade effectively as the judge. He was able to do it all on time. He didn't get caught, and he had that sort of flamboyance of Human Target that we've come to expect that gave such a nice feeling to the otherwise hopelessness of this episode. So kudos to Diggle and Human Target. What I did not appreciate was that when Oliver afterwards, when it was all said and done, was thanking Diggle for all of that, because it was allegedly Renee's idea for Human Target to masquerade as the judge, all of the credit in the end, that final emotional moment where Oliver goes and talks to Renee about it and apologizes and all of that credit goes to Renee. Here's why I have a problem with that. If they wanted to give Renee a redemption arc, it sure better be more believable and specific to Renee than that. What they wrote was a fantastic moment for the court where both as Tommy and as the judge, Human Target was the perfect addition to this episode, and Diggle going and getting him made perfect sense. And then they gave all that credit to Renee, and it seemed like this sort of shoddy afterthought of, oh, we need this guy on a redemption arc, so I guess we'll give him credit for this one. He thought of the guy being the judge, so we'll give him that. And it felt very cheap. It felt very shallow. I would be totally fine with Renee getting a redemption arc if it was specific to him. Renee has specific skills. He has specific background. And if his specific skills and specific background were instrumental in getting Oliver free from this trial, maybe Renee, you know, knew who could and couldn't be trusted within the court system, because we know he's been through the court system a few times. If he had sort of this street justice people that he used to work with that he could bring in, and it's something that he himself did, and we know that it's attributed to him, that would be a redemption arc for him. This just felt like giving him credit for Diggle's work, which does not endear me to him. It makes me question whether any of the writing issues have been solved. And it also feels like the writing is not being accredited to the right people. The writers did a fantastic job putting this together for Diggle and Human Target. And it was really heartwarming because Oliver and Diggle have had this whole conflict this whole time. And this would have been a nice moment for Oliver and Diggle to come together and be like, wow, the brotherhood's still there. Diggle went on this whole mission to another country. And even though he's working for another team, he pulled that team into doing this. And Diggle did not get that credit because they had to, for some reason, give it to Renee. It would have been more meaningful to me to see Renee testify against him and sort of be hopeless in this episode because he's like, wow, it's this whole additional thing of, you know, I'm the one person who got blackmailed into testifying against him. Oliver's really going to hate me now. And Oliver still comes to him as the bigger person and said, like, I would have done the exact same thing for William. And it would have had nothing to do with Renee taking credit for Human Target. It just would have been them bonding over this fact that they're both fathers. They both would have done the same, and it would have been a real forgiveness moment without that leverage of I'm responsible for this somehow, and that's supposed to be my redemption arc points.
You don't feel anything about that at all, do you?
I'm so sorry for going on so long about that.
Like, I see what you're saying. I don't feel as strongly about all of that. I think the Diggle and Oliver reconnecting will come probably next episode. I think they just used this moment as a way to patch things up slowly, because we didn't see Oliver and Dinah reconnect or anything. We only saw Oliver and Renee. And so I think one at a time is going to happen. There was just too much going on this episode that they could fit it all in. I think it was just this moment because, yeah, it was Diggle that went and got Human Target and everything worked. I think Diggle maybe communicated with Oliver or Felicity behind the scenes, because Oliver seemed to know what was going on. So I think we're just meant to believe that they're working together behind the scenes. We don't need to see an on-screen moment of them going, hey, bro, yeah, that's cool. Thanks for doing that. It's just they are working together because Oliver already knew what was happening. And I don't give all the credit to Renee. It's just that when they were, everything was Diggle's doing in the beginning, it was just when they were sitting in the courtroom, when Renee leaned over to Diggle and said, yeah, can you help me with something? And they both left. And that's when he came up with the idea to put Human Target in as the judge. That's the credit right. that he's getting. And right. I think Oliver was just acknowledging that, you know, Renee went out of his way to try to make amends, to try to help him out and to free him from this prosecution. I think I think Oliver was just acknowledging that. And that's why they did the apologies amongst them. I'm sure more of it will come later between Oliver and Digga. We'll see that, you know, the brotherhood is there and the friends are there. I think episode wise, they just had too much to fit in and maybe scenes were filmed and it got cut on the editing room that right. they just felt it doesn't need it. Oliver acknowledges it, that he already knew they were working together behind the scenes because he knew the plan that was in place. So maybe that's all they felt we need. And let's just get this Renee and Oliver kind of a little bit done. And hopefully in the last two episodes, we'll see a little more of the rest. I don't know. That's right. kind of how I see it. So.
Well, I guess you're right too.
But the one point going back to the email, where was it? Something was said about what if Diaz just wants Oliver in jail, why doesn't he just throw him in there and be done with it? Because he controls the city. You have to pull back on Diaz wants to completely ruin, humiliate, and embarrass Oliver, completely tear him down. So by making him go to trial, be on public display, be proven he's the Green Arrow, be, you know, arrested for all of these charges and everything, I think that's just part of his overall plan, is how badly he wants to ruin Oliver. So yeah, I'm sure he could just get him tossed in jail, but then that doesn't get the satisfaction that he wants of completely humiliating him publicly. So that's probably why.
Hmm.
Cool.
Good points.
Good points. And you got Cammy all up in arms about it. So good email.
I promise that's the last moment in this. I'll be salty. That's the end. Yeah. I'm going to be so nice and positive for the remainder of this feedback.
I think people like your saltiness. That's why you're the villainess. So. All right. But well, moving on.
It's all about balance.
Totally. We got a voicemail from X-Force 11. Let's see what you have to say.
Hello, Flash and Chameleon. This is Jeff, X-Force 11. After tonight's amazing episode of Gotham, I don't know how I thought Arrow was going to fare up against that. But I will say, I enjoyed the acting in this episode. I really appreciated the depth and the feeling that the entire cast brought to it. I appreciated the movement of so many of the storylines, and I thought it was some good turn of events. But I'm still frustrated because we have had all season where Siren could have killed Diaz very easily in his sleep, and this would have been done with. I don't understand the writing behind this. I really don't understand her reason for being under his thumb this long, regardless of how she feels about Lance. So that's my only holdup on this episode is she finally makes her turn and he's already planned for it because he's seeing what she can do. But I mean, there were a lot of opportunities that we saw and we didn't see that she would have had the opportunity to take him out. So I just don't understand the hold that he had on her from keeping her from killing. Yeah, I just don't understand that. All right. Well, I'm going to leave it at that, because I thought the rest of the episode was very good. I always like Christopher Chance, although I like Mark Valley a little bit better. But this was a well-acted episode, and I'm happy to see the acting in this episode, and we'll see where it goes from here. All right, X-Force 11 out.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. I agree with him. If they could have got Mark Valley, who played Human Target on the TV show, that it would have been such a cool tie-in to actually have the original actor play the part. That would have been really cool.
Yeah. And I also really liked his points about Laurel Siren being able to kill Dragon. But
yeah, and I think everybody, a lot of people are feeling that. I know you definitely are, Cammy. I can't defend the character and what's going on. I think what's happened is in the writing, like Jeff has pointed out, We had the wicked, vicious siren in the beginning that we all loved as a villain, but they wrote in this idea with her softening to Lance, trying to be her dad that she never had. And that has changed her character to not be the villainous psycho that she was. And that is why she is acting and behaving the way she is now. And it has nothing to do with the character. The writers have changed her character path. She is not the same character that she got introduced to us as. The writers have changed that, and this is the siren we're dealing with now. So even though we all feel like she could have done it, she's not going to, because of the way they've written her to be soft on Lance Knoll. Although she did go for the killing blow. She was there. Yes, she could have done it any other time, but she did finally make the decision to go after him, and she did. Like, she had him by the scruff of the neck and was about to scream into his ear, and he turned on the device. So don't forget that she did make the choice to try to do it. It's just soft now and not the vicious, don't-give-a-damn killer that she was initially, and that's all I can say about her.
I'm with you. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but thanks, Jeff. Next up, we got a really good long email from Stormy. You want to read this one?
Sure. Stormy writes in to say, I'm giving this episode an 8 out of 10. I loved every single scene with Felicity, Oliver, and William. When Oliver said he couldn't lose Felicity and William, you could see the fear on his face. Mm-hmm. All three actors were on point in their scenes, as was the dialogue. Oliver saying he doesn't want to out himself as Arrow to protect his family, and also because he wants a life after his time in the suit is over. This is such character growth for Oliver that has taken place over 6 years. In seasons 1 and 2, his entire existence was to write his father's wrongs, accepting that meant he might likely die early and alone. Now he has a family to fight for, and he finally believes he deserves a life of happiness. Can we talk about how amazing Felicity was on the stand? She didn't let the prosecutor get away with trying to say her marriage was just to protect her from testifying against Oliver. Her line about being in love with Oliver for 6 years made him smile, and it did the same for me. My favorite line from Felicity this episode was her telling Oliver, "We fight for each other," and Oliver saying, "We're going to save each other." You can't get more power couple than that, and I love them for it. Aw, good point, Stormy.
Yeah, like I love her idea about this being good character growth for Oliver over 6 years, because it was just him in the beginning, and he was willing to possibly die alone, and now he doesn't. He's got a family to protect, and he wants to live on for them. I totally agree with you. They have really developed this. This was like a 6 year story arc kind of coming together, and it really sunk home how much Oliver has changed since season one. And a great, great way to bring it up, Stormy.
Absolutely. She goes on to say, speaking of things I loved this episode was getting to have Colin Donnell back home on Arrow. Mm-hmm. Even though I knew a while ago it was Human Target, it didn't take away from my happiness of seeing Tommy's face again. Colin did such a great job with the sarcastic lines he delivered to the prosecutor and the dirty cops. Looking at Oliver's face when he sees Tommy breaks my heart. You can still see the pain, loss, and guilt he has over the loss of his best friend.
Yeah.
Even though they aren't seeing eye to eye right now, Oliver and Dick managed to work out the Human Target plan. When the chips are gone, I will never give up on seeing those two being there for each other as brothers would do. It was also nice to see that Oliver has a plan with Dick to get Felicity and William into Argus protection if he goes to prison. How badass did David Ramsey look in the opening fight scene? Can we have more of that, please, Arrow? See, okay. I'm with her on that.
Well, see, if you'll have to watch it again, but that's good. I'm glad people enjoyed it. That's fine. But yeah, again, good points there about Colin coming back. I'm glad to see him back. It's kind of fun that 6 years later, a character that was only there in season one is still remembered so fondly. So I hope the actor really appreciates the love that he's getting.
Yeah. Absolutely. She goes on to talk about Renee. She says, while I'm still done with Renee as a character, I felt for him in this episode as Diaz had Zoe in the courtroom. The talk between Oliver and Renee was good, proving again that Oliver isn't the man Renee says he is. I have no doubt had Renee come to him in the first place, he would have done everything he could to help Renee out. I still want Renee to leave and go be a dad to Zoe in another city. He's the only parent she has, and I think that would understandably weigh on him when he's risking his life. Curtis whining about being the only one not subpoenaed was annoying. As someone who's been subpoenaed in a serious case, it's not the least bit fun, so be glad you weren't needed on the stand. Yeah, good point. She goes on to talk about Black Siren and says, no matter how many times the show tries to insist Black Siren is a victim, I will never buy it nor empathize with her. She's been more than willingly participant to the evil she's committed because she wanted to or a man told her to. For me, I don't see Black Siren as a full character. She's just a spineless villain who makes all her decisions on what a man says, be it Diaz or what Lance wants for her. If she owned the monster she is, I would have use for her, though that would be small use. She's another example of meta simply not working on Arrow, and they need to give that up. The majority of heroes and villains are human, so most, if not all, metas will be more powerful than them. I loved Ragman, but it's the same reason he can't be on the show. Siren could have taken Chase or Dragon out at any time, but she doesn't, choosing to willingly comply with whatever evil commands they give her. Tonight, she used her cry and a gun to take out Diaz's men, but when it came time to end Diaz, she doesn't even attempt to use the gun she has. If she's so scared of Diaz, go back to the earth you're from. Diaz has no way of getting to you there. Good points.
True.
She goes on to talk about Lance. She says, I'm bummed to see Paul Blackthorne leaving the show, but I'm not the least bit surprised. Sadly, most of his storylines have revolved around his daughters, and that's just not a sustainable way to write a character. I only see two ways for Lance to leave the show, and I hate both options. Option number one is he dies because Black Siren is most likely trying trying to save her from Diaz. Option number two, he chooses to give up his life and go off with his not daughter, Black Siren, possibly back to Earth too. With Sarah coming back in the finale, I'm leaning towards he dies and maybe tries to get Sarah to take up his cause in redeeming Black Siren before his death comes. I hope for Sarah's sake she doesn't get stuck with Black Siren, especially if it's to take over her father's delusional crusade of redeeming Siren. Ooh, interesting theories here. We have no idea what's happening, but those are interesting theories.
I do not spoil the end, guys. If you like, yeah, look ahead and see what's going to happen. I know. But
as far as I know, these are theories.
I'm suggesting for future. Yeah. We got two episodes left. I would suggest if you want pure surprise and enjoyment, do not look at spoilers and photos from the scenes coming up or whatever. Yeah, let's see how y'all react to what Sarah really is going to do.
Yeah. We'll see. It could surprise us all. Mm-hmm. Well, she does have a prediction for the next episode. She says she thinks that Diaz might try to take out everyone Oliver cares about. And then she comments a bit about what's in the promo, which I'm not going to spoil for anybody. But then she has a little bit of a theory. She says, I think Felicity will get hurt next episode because of Diaz. And then watch out because Oliver doesn't play with those who come after his wife. Interesting theory.
Very true. Whew, awesome email. Boy, you had lots on your mind this time, Stormy.
Yeah, Stormy has such great thoughts.
Good stuff. All right, next up we got a voicemail from Destiny Dazzler. See what she had to say after this episode.
Hi, Arrow Squad, it's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I absolutely loved it. It gets a 10 for me. I think it was my favorite of the season. I completely forgot about the CIA guy that changes faces. I think his name was Chris. I completely forgot about him. I thought that it was another Earth's Tommy Merlin that Diggle somehow got a hold of and got to help. So that was really cool to bring him back. I am also really nervous about what Diaz said at the end of the episode, that he's going to kill everyone that Oliver loves and Oliver. I think that him and Felicity and William are in a lot of danger and might end up in Argus protection after all. I'm also really worried about Laurel because she crossed Diaz, and I wonder if it's going to cost her life and end up with Lance maybe sacrificing himself to save her or something like that. Overall, I love this episode very much, and I'm excited to see where the last couple of episodes go. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Awesome, Dazzler. Thank you. Interesting. Could that be the twist they're talking about that changes season 7? Oliver puts Felicity and William and Reza into protective custody, and they're gone for a little while.
Until
he can deal with Diaz and the corruption in the city.
Right.
Because it could, because Diaz was.
I understand that, but then I also don't want to see them off screen.
No. Well, of course, none of us do, but Diaz, that's another point she brought up too. Diaz at the end was so angry that he says, I'm going to kill Oliver and his family and everybody he loves. So Diaz is mad. He is going to come after everybody.
Right.
So, yeah, that's actually kind of scary. Holy
yeah,
cow.
Yeah, it is.
That's hitting me. I didn't pick up on the weight of that while watching it, but boy, now.
Yeah, it makes everybody in danger now.
Yikes. Okay, Dazzler, thank you for that. Last up, we have an email from Dado, and he says, hello, squad. First, I want to give a shout out to Bat Jordan. We are the squad's finest as Bat Jordan and Dad L. Let's keep rooting for our anti-hero Black Siren. We finally saw her take a stand against Diaz. I'm really excited to see where that storyline goes. Oh, okay. So he's actually excited about that.
There we go.
I thought this episode was going to be mainly set up for the final episodes, and it was, but it was so much more. It had great drama and some twists and turns. It was good to see Human Target back. I also thought Stephen Amell gave a great performance. He has the ability to convey so much emotion with his looks. If you watch the episode again, pay attention to his expressions and reactions. Great acting work by him. Yeah, I totally concur. He really gets a lot across just by his expression on his face. It's great. Mm-hmm. This episode got me pumped as we head into the final episodes. I give it 8.5 Missed Tommy Merlins. Dado, last father of Krypton.
Aww.
Yeah, awesome. I'm glad to hear that you are that excited about it, Dado. That is good. I am amped up as well. Whew, yeah.
Bring on all the danger. Bring kidnap everybody. On. I'm here for the high stakes.
As we roll into the last two episodes coming up.
Yes.
My God.
Next week's episode is called The Ties That Bind.
Okay. Well, what does that mean? Is that family ties? Is that teammate ties?
I don't know.
What is that? But, I wanted to hold back on the reins in the beginning, but I'm telling you, Cammy, we've got two episodes left, only two, to wrap up this season. And I'm thinking, my God, I don't want it to end. Why can't we have 45 episode seasons and just keep on going? Like,
right. No hiatus of any kind.
Oh, but that's okay. I'm glad that most of our listeners are getting excited about how it's going to wrap up. They're starting to buy into a little bit of Diaz and maybe understanding that the city corruption is kind of the actual enemy right now.
Right.
Yeah, and just what's going to happen with Oliver and the teams and his family.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, I wonder if it's going to be a massive cliffhanger they leave us hanging on, or is it going to wrap up an entire season's worth of stories and leave it as a fresh, clean slate to start season 7 with the time jump they already admitted to?
I'm guessing there'll be a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Well, that could be it, that maybe the cliffhanger is the family goes into protective custody, 7 months pass, and we catch up to what's been happening over the last 7 months while they've been hidden away. What has Oliver done? Maybe that's,
Well,
interesting.
Probably Felicity will be pregnant. That's the one theory I'm staking
that
my claim
on. To the end, eh?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for sticking with us on this one and giving us some fantastic feedback as always. Cannot wait until next week. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great podcasts covering your favorite TV shows, check out our partners at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.